Hey, everybody, it is Wednesday again. It is time for NoFilter.net. It's Snipes and Stripes, my buddy Tim Peel. And sorry, we are starting a little bit late. But hey, as long as we're here, we're going to have some fun. Tim, you're looking good. We don't have the Snipes and Stripes shirt on. I think this is the first time that I've seen you without it. But you look fresh. You look ready. And I think it's going to be really exciting because we have a great guest that's going to join us in a little bit, Mike Milbury. But first, let's thank my Whiskey in the Wild, for being a great sponsor. WhiskeyInTheWild.com for the best chocolate and chocolate orange whiskey of all time. Go get your bottle today. And I think you love giving our other sponsor, Tim. So give us the Bet Online sponsor deal and tell them why they should go and start betting on hockey.
Absolutely. Bet Online continues to be your number one source for all your NHL basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs with in-game live betting contests and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile device. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team, and remember to use your promo code BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, the game starts here. Thank you to Bet Online for your
Hey, we're already getting chirped on the chat line right now. We're saying Tim did his laundry this week. That's why your Snipes and Stripes is in the wash. So well, listen, interesting. It's almost trade deadline. We'll chat a little bit about trades after at some point during the show. I think it'll be really interesting when my good friend Mike Milbury gets on. And let me tell you something, Mike Milbury is a legend in the game. He's a legend in his TV prowess. Neither of us are on TV right now, but it's going to be really interesting to see what Mike Milbury is thinking about the game today, what he's been up to, chat a little bit about his career. And I'm sure he's going to give us a couple great quotes, because it's never, never a loss for words when you're talking to Mike Milbury.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. He's played, you know, he had a great career with Boston. He coached, he was a GM, then he got into broadcasting. This guy has done it all. I'm looking forward to the great stories, and I'm looking forward to talking to him about the trades that were made today, because there were a bunch of them, and what he thinks on what teams in the next 48 hours or less are going to make trades and what certain teams need to get possibly put them over the hump. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, very interesting. A couple trades that I just really it kind of took me a little bit by surprise. A couple of guys, at least Alex Wenberg, who I didn't even hear being on the trade block from Seattle, getting shipped out. An amazing little trade right there for Wenberg.
It's going to be in New York, right?
What's that?
A good pickup for New York.
It's a great pickup for New York. He's going to fit in really well. There's a talented little player. I've liked him for a long time, and maybe being in New York, a nice change of venue, being in a big hockey city like New York, I think that's really going to help Alex Wenberg.
And New York only gave away draft picks, similar to Florida picking up Tarasenko for draft picks, and Ottawa actually retaining 50% of Tarasenko's salary. I'm not a big Tarasenko fan anymore. I saw him play his last year or so here in St. Louis. We then saw what happened at the trade deadline last year when he went to the New York Rangers. He didn't do anything there. He's been average this year. I guess he's a supplemental piece. Maybe somebody gets hurt, they can move him up and down the lineup. But I think Tarasenko's best days are behind him. But you know what? He's going to a great team, and it might not be a bad pickup for them.
Tarasenko's still there, correct?
Tarasenko got traded to Florida today.
He's in Florida. Okay, I didn't see that one. So so I've been running around working, right?
Got traded to Florida. And Ottawa retained half his salary, which was only $2.5 million for them to retain, and they got a couple fourth round draft picks. Not much for him. That goes to show what, you know, the market indicates. You know what the value is of a player, And like I said, he's going to play on their third line.
I think that's a great place for Tarasenko. You know, he doesn't have to be a top guy. He can contribute when he can. I still think when he was in Ottawa, he was expected to put the puck in the net. He was expected to carry a heavy load. I don't think he's going to be expected to carry a heavy load in Florida. I think it could be the perfect place for him to be. Second power play, third line winger. I think that's the perfect place to be. Now, the question is what everybody talks about. Is he okay in the locker room? Is he going to be a good fit in the locker room? Because a lot of people say he's just a me player and he only cares about his own stats and his own ice time. Can't do that in Florida when you have the number one team in the league that you're now playing for.
Yeah, no, that's the reputation on him, JR, for sure. But I don't think he'll have a problem. I think, you know, Matty Tkachuk will line and make sure he fits in there. And you know what? Barkov's on there, fellow Russian.
Yep.
That'll help out a lot, too. Barkov will take him under his wing and make sure that he's comfortable. And I think he'll fit in there.
Well, let's bring on our good friend, Mike Milbury. I can't wait to see him. And we've had some amazing run-ins on television. But I will tell you this. Mike Milbury, whether you like him or not on television, is one of the greatest guys that you'll ever go out to dinner with, one of the greatest guys you can hang out with away from the rink. He was a bastard on the ice. He was tough as a GM. And he was a guy that spoke the truth, and he's never changed. And you got to give guys like that. There he is. Hi, Mike Milbury.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I told you to make it simple, you son of a bitch. I've been on this with Leslie for a half an hour trying to get it straight.
Well, you see, and then what happens is all you do is press one button, and then you pop right onto the show. And buddy, I can't thank you enough for jumping on with us. I've been really excited ever since we talked the other day. To see us on television together, or at least on the computer, makes my heart happy. So how are you, Mike? How are things? Good. How's life?
Good. You know what? We just got back from a 6-week trip to Florida, although I got the flu, went to a wedding and came back, and people were dropping by the dozen with COVID, and I wound up getting tested, and I had the flu. And the doctor said to me, "You're going to wish you had COVID instead of this version of the flu." I was in my back for like 3 weeks in Florida. You know, you're supposed to be playing golf, going to the beach.
I was on the
couch watching Blue Bloods.
Hey, listen, I think the government has screwed up this whole sick aspect of life, right? Because, you know, you have COVID and you have the flu and you have a common cold. And now nobody knows the difference between anything. The COVID is the flu. Well, flu is the COVID. And it's driving me crazy. My wife is sick. You'll hear her coughing in the background every once in a while. She has laryngitis. And it's like nobody knows what one from the other.
He's got laryngitis from yelling at you, probably.
Well, Michael, Trump's going to get in there and straighten it all out, right?
Well, listen, if Trump won in 2020, we wouldn't have the problems with COVID that we have now, because we wouldn't have the bullshit that we went through. So anyway, but we'll see what happens. But Michael, what have you been doing? Where I know you just got back from Florida. You've been doing a little things with your podcast. Tell us what you've been doing with your life, because I've missed you.
Well, you know, we both got canceled for various reasons, and I wasn't happy with that. I thought my comment was really pretty mild, and I waited a year. NBC paid me off, and then I went back to try when NBC lost the contract to TNT and ESPN. I tried to check in with them, and they just even wouldn't pick up the phone. I was like completely, you know, out of the realm of possibility. And I actually talked to Gary after my contract was over, and I said, "Did you think what I said was so bad?" And he said, "Mike, I don't even remember what you said." Yeah. And I thought, like, you son of a bitch, after 50 years in the league, and so you hire some woman to be vice president of inclusion and diversity, and, you know, I say something that's relatively mild, and actually doing NBC a favor, you know, I wasn't supposed to go to the bubble, but you know, Edzo was just coming off his cancer issues and they wanted me to go. And so I went, and in the end, it cost me, the tail end of my career. So since that time, we moved to Cape Cod, living in Mashpee, which is near New Seabury, which is a great area. And I do some work for WEI here, and not a whole lot. I wish I was doing more. I can't tell you that I'm comfortably retired. I mean, I don't have any money issues, but I wish I was doing something else. I wish I was doing more. I wish I could take Tim's job.
For our listeners, your comment was basically, to paraphrase, it was the players in the bubble don't have any distractions. And what you said, resonated with me, because on a much smaller scale, but when I would work a home game in St. Louis, I never felt rested driving down to the Enterprise Center like I did when I was on the road. Because when I'm at home, I'm running errands, I'm taking the kids to the school, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm probably working in the yard, sneaking a nap. When I'm on the road, I don't have any distractions. I don't let my wife ask me to do. It blows me away that that's the world we live in now, that people are so friggin' sensitive, and that you've got to be. Because what you said was not that bad. It wasn't bad at all.
No. And I stand by it. It's true. Have distractions, whether it's women or family or anything else, you know, you're bound to be a little bit more focused. But ancient history. I got to live with it. And now I'm approaching my 72nd birthday, which is hard for me to believe. So I got to find a way to either just ease into retirement or find something else to do, because I'm sort of caught in this transitional phase that is not comfortable for me.
Please tell me what you're eating and drinking, because if I look like you at 72, I'm going to be really happy. You look amazing at 72, Michael.
I will say, I just got through a whole bunch of physicals, and outside of that flu I had, everybody said, you know, you're going to be fine. I don't know why. I haven't been an altar boy for most of my life.
Well, speaking of, you haven't been an altar boy, and neither have I. And just my last comment on what we were just talking about. I think that the people at the top just didn't have the guts or the balls just to say, you know what, your guy's method of reporting or talking or speaking or being totally honest is really, it's kind of not welcome anymore, whether it's to the league or to the execs. And they didn't just have the guts just to look at us and say, you know what, we're just going to go a different direction. Instead, they just canceled us and fired us, and that was all. And listen, my life has been better since. I'm doing a lot of great things. My partner Tim Peel and I have been crushing the podcast world and having a lot of fun with it. But I'm curious to you, now I'll give you the analyst boots. What's your impression of the league right now? We're seeing a lot of good players. We're seeing a lot of good teams. What's your impression of the league now in relation to when we were on air doing it for the last 10 years?
You know, it's probably as skilled as it's ever been. I mean, and there's no one more skilled than that damn McDavid. I mean, I watched him in the game last night against Boston, and overtime. You know, it's funny that the crew on Nesson was complaining, saying it was almost unfair that the Oilers could throw out Dreisaitl and McDavid. Well, you know, that's, you know, suck on it. I mean, this guy he's worth the price of admission. And there are a bunch of guys in the league that, not that many, but there are some really good teams. But it's, as you know, it's not nearly as physical. It's not nearly as intense. It's what's making the kid in New York a sort of folk hero. You know, Rempe comes into the league and he starts fighting people. He takes on Ryan Reeves. And, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Kevin DuPont from the Globe about it. He looks like he's 12 years old.
Yeah.
And I feel bad that he has to take on all these guys that have been doing this for like 15, 20 years. And, you know, I saw a picture of him today and I almost wanted to, I wish I could call him, because I saw his fist contraction. It's not right. You know, he should be holding his fist like this. It was out here. Like, you're not going to connect that way. With your extra reach, you still have to come straight out and twist like a karate punch. And I want him to be able to, if he's going to have to go through this crap, I want him to be able to do it in the right way. I mean, he's got my admiration for courage and commitment, but, you know, you still have to have a tactic. Although he does know how to string it out, right? He knows how to grab a shoulder and use his reach to his advantage, although you could see in the fight with Reeves, Reeves used his strength to get inside a little bit and did some damage on him. But the kid is, he's sort of an enigma here because there's not many people in the league are willing to do this, especially coming in. He's earning his respect, and, you know, hopefully he can get through it like so many others have done it and then learn to be part of a, you know, I don't know where his upside is, third line, fourth line, whatever it is, but he learns to become not just a fighter, but a player.
JR, there was the day that I was released from the NHL, you called me that morning. Many other people called me, and, you know, it's mostly friends and a lot of people that I didn't know and so on. But there was somebody that's with us tonight that took the time to call me, and I didn't have Mike's number. We weren't friends. We didn't, you know, we didn't see each other. We were on the same plane going to Russia together for the Olympics, and he slept most of the flight and I drank most of the flight. And all of a sudden I get this unknown number, this number I didn't recognize, and I answer it, and it was you, Mike, and you said that you were sorry for what happened and so on. Why did you feel it necessary? Because it really meant a lot to me. Why did you feel it necessary to reach out to somebody that you really weren't friends with to kind of,
you know, we share, all of us, a commonality, and that is an affinity for the sport, commitment to the sport, and in our cases, you know, we derive a livelihood, and, you know, I feel like I have a sense of, thanks to my parents, my father in particular, I have a sense of right and wrong, and when I see something that's not right, and especially to somebody who's in the same hockey fraternity as I am, you know, the least you can do is, you know, take the time to reach out and say, hey, you know, I'm feeling for you. I understand the situation. Maybe there was nothing I could do, but I feel it's important to offer a measure of moral support in those circumstances. And that's pretty much,
well,
I mean, I think that's important for everybody to do when things like, you know, JR got, you know, he got crushed and I got crushed, and I had a lot of people that called me, and it meant a lot to me at the time. Yeah. And still does. And yeah. So,
you know, in speaking with that, Mike, I totally agree with you 100%. And there's some, I got a lot of the same calls, and I felt the same sort of love for the people who reached out to me. But I will tell you, one of the guys that I never heard from when I got gassed, and it surprised me the most, was Doc Emrick, a guy that was the most respected guy in the game, one of the best announcers of all time in any sport, would have fun with me at the games, would email me funny things about, you know, being a pirate at one time on the show, because he's a big pirate fan. Never got the courtesy of a text or a phone call from one of the most respected hockey guys. And that really, really disappointed me. So way to go for being the way that you are.
Well, I mean, I can't answer for Doc. He's always been, you know, for me, you know, was a wonderful announcer. Anybody, you know, dances to his own drummer. And so I have no idea what that was all about, but I'm glad other people did. I'm glad other people felt, well, you know compelled to do it. And I was thankful. And, you know, when your situation happened, Tim, how did it strike you? How did you feel about it? How did you feel like you were maligned?
I was devastated because I had 4 weeks to go. And the only thing that bothered me, you know, when you do something wrong, you have that, you get that pit in your stomach that is really tough to leave. Like when I was stupid and I took the shot, the tequila shot with Greg Wyshynski, they suspended me for one game. I felt sick about that because I knew I shouldn't have put myself in that position, and I had that pit in my stomach for weeks. But when this happened, it was amazing. I was fine that day and the days after, because I knew what gets said on the ice, how you manage a game, how you call a game, how the players expect it. And I knew what I said on a scale of 1 to 10 was a 2 compared to what the some of the things that's been said on the ice that just weren't picked up by a microphone. And the only thing that ever bugged me and still bugs me to this day is when my kids came home, Mike, and I had to tell them, hey, you're not going to be able to see your dad ref his final game in St. Louis. And that was the only thing that bothered me and still bothers me. But I just wanted to say thank you for that, because you truly find out, and you guys have all been through it, you truly find out who your friends are and who are the fringe people that are real. You think they're your friends, but they're really not your friends. And you, through tough times like that, you really, you know what, it's kind of like the sky opens, and you're like, okay, I know who my friends are. And really, at the end of the day, it's only a select small group of friends and your family that matters, and everybody else, you don't give a shit what everyone else thinks. So,
well, Mike,
is that Tracy Cat coughing in the background. That's
Tracy talking in the background. She's there. She's got her hat on. She's doing work. She's listening to us. So,
let's talk a little Bruins.
That's where I was going. My next question was going right to the Bruins, because I mean, the history that you have, that you live in the city, you see them play a lot. I want to go back first to the beginning of the season when Bergeron retired, when Krejci retired. They both left the team. There was a big gap and a big opening and question mark. And what did you think was going to happen? And are you surprised that the Bruins have kept up?
Go back even a little further, because the beginning of last season, when Jim Montgomery was named coach, the Bruins had a lot of Krejci came back and Bergeron was, come back for his swan song. We didn't know it then, but there was McAvoy was out with shoulder injury. I think Marchand was out for a while. Grizzlick was out with. And the expectation was for that team to hang around till Thanksgiving or Christmas, till everybody was healthy. And then they'd make a push and be like the 7 or 8 seed in the Eastern Conference. That's what everybody expected last year.
Right.
And then what happened? Nobody, and I mean nobody, saw it coming. They had a magical mystery ride, right? They go all the way through the regular season, barely lose a game. They come to the trading deadline, and Don Sweeney does an incredible job of adding 3 good players that just fit right into the whole system. And, Orlov looked like he was a number one defenseman for a while, and Hathaway was a disturber. And Bertuzzi was, he was their best player in the seven games that they managed to play. But what do they do when they go to the playoffs? They just laid a great big fart on it. It was just, they just couldn't get out of their own way, and Florida beat them up. They physically manhandled them and stuck with it, despite the fact that they were down 3-1 and they were down in game 7, and the Bruins blew a lead. Like they now, moving forward to this year, they lose Krejci, they lose Bergeron, and you think there's this giant gap. No, think there is this giant gap in center. And they're going to move Coyle up to the number 2 spot, and they're going to try to get Zacha to play. And, you can't call him a number 1 center, but they were going to be the 2 top line centers. And Coyle has never been a top line center, but he and Zacha in the first half of the season were unexpectedly productive. And this team that was now, after all those losses, you're thinking this team is going nowhere. And again, they come out with this brilliant start. And they managed to muck around. The bottom line is the goaltending has been outstanding from the start of last year till right up until tonight. Last night, Swayman was brilliant. Omar was brilliant. And Swayman was brilliant against Toronto. They're leaning on their goaltending in a heavy way. Yeah. Zacha scored a couple goals last night, but he'd been really off his mark for a while. DeBrusk has been streaky. So now they come in after this great start, and they've been bumping along to the All-Star game. So what are they going to do at the trade deadline? It's interesting. They can try to be active. They have no picks in the first 3 rounds this year. There's not one. They're encumbered by that. They have very little in the pipeline. So how do they make a trade? And the only way they can make a trade is if they give up a goaltender. And my thinking is Ullmark, if they're going to make a big deal. And they have to make a decision about DeBrusk, if they want to keep him. He's looking for $6.5 million. Up until a couple of games ago, I think he'd scored one goal in like 14 games. Don't quote me on the exact statistics, but he's been very erratic. I mean, so he can try to make a deal. In my mind, he doesn't have much to work with, or he can try to investigate building for the future, which would include deals for Ullmark and DeBrusk, looking to build for younger guys, because I don't think they're going to win a cup, or they can stay put. Just, hey, they're second place overall in the league. I find it hard to believe. You know, you watch them play, the leads they've blown, their lack of physicality, yet they're second place overall in the National Hockey League. So you could just stay put and hope the goaltenders are brilliant through the playoffs and can carry them to a conference final or miraculously a Stanley Cup, which I don't see happening.
You know, it's kind of funny, Mike. We've always been very similar with our look on the game and our analysis in the game. And with you just talking, you took pretty much the words right out of my mouth, because part of my questions was going to be about Ullmark, and another one was going to be about Jake DeBrusk. Because I think if you are going to make a big push and a big trade, those are the two that are going to come to my first thought. Now, you talked about the playoffs. I thought the start of the Bruins' demise last playoffs was Ullmark coming out of the net in game five and making a brain dead play on the puck, which ended up on Tkachuk's goal, which gave them life. Is it smart for the Bruins right now, knowing that their defense is a little bit smaller? Is it smart for them to go into the playoffs with two goaltender system, or would they be benefit to just let the ride Swayman and teeter out Ullmark?
There's been talk of Swayman getting an extension. I don't know if there's any truth to that, but
who would you keep?
Ullmark's at $5 million. Swayman wants to be the number one goaltender. He's going to be looking at $6 or $7 million. You're going to wind up with a goaltending tandem that's in the, you know, $12 to $15 million range. I don't know if you can afford that. It's a luxury for them. And with the number of holes they have, I think they have to look at moving Ullmark. And I've said this for a long time, and a lot of people around here agree with me. I'd like to have a second option in case Swayman falters. He hasn't been given the role in the playoffs. He got stuck in a horseshit position last year when they went with Ullmark too long, who was complaining then, and that this actually bothers me. After the series was over, he claimed that he was hurt. Like, bullshit. You know, don't tell me that, you know, 2 months after the series is over, that he was hurt. I mean, I didn't want to hear it. And I heard from people around the team, and I say this with a whole dose of caution, that, you know, he folded under the pressure. He couldn't handle it. And Swayman does not appear to me to be that kind of a player. I've met him a couple times. He just has this confidence, this self-assuredness. You know, he looks you in the eye. I mean, I've seen him. He's a very effective, efficient goaltender, athletic only when he needs to be. So I think it's going to be a luxury that they can't afford to have goaltenders making that much money when Ullmark's term comes up, and that's, what, a year from now? But the problem is he's got a 16-team no-trade clause. And I don't know what those teams are, but, I mean, if you wanted to put 16 teams on it, who would you put, JR? I know New Jersey would be on there.
Well, that's the one team that probably needs a goaltender the most is New Jersey.
That's right.
And he can probably get the most four. Because one thing that Boston has the luxury of is maybe getting rid of Ullmark and getting a valuable piece to either their offense or their defensive core that could be a huge, huge asset come playoff time. But I didn't know about the 16-team no-trade clause that Ullmark had, which could be a little bit of a problem for Boston. But
yeah,
still,
it is a problem. I think it goes away at the end of the year, and that might stall a trade. But I think we're on the track.
Okay, well let's take all the teams. Let's take that 16 team away. You're putting your hat on. You have the ability to trade Allmark. What are you getting for him? You as a GM, because you've been in that position before.
It's a really wonky trade market when you're talking goalies. You never know what's. You need a team that's felt the pinch, like New Jersey, of not having adequate goaltending. You know, they've got a pretty good team. They've got some really talented young players.
LA Kings are another team needs a goaltender. Yeah, they're not really happy with their goaltender.
If you don't have a goaltender that can cover for mistakes, then you're in trouble. And you'll never win without a good goaltender. And teams that realize that they need a goaltender suffer internally. And everybody around, all the players around in front of the goaltender that's insufficient, their confidence starts to falter. So you've got to find a way to realize that you need a goaltender. There are plenty of them out there. Maybe you want to go cheap and try to turn over a lot of rocks and find a real gem in there someplace. But, you know, Allmark won the Vezina Trophy last year. He's proven that he can. He's been good this year, even though he's on a losing streak right now. He still played pretty well. The Bruins in front of them have been porous. So I think he's got to be looked at as a prime prospect. And what would they get? Obviously, they want to get bigger on the blue line, a little nastier on the blue line. They need to find somebody that's going to get the job done in the middle of the ice somewhere down the line.
Well, to your point, Mike, about you cannot pay both those goaltenders that kind of money. You can't, because you wrap up $12 million in goaltenders, you're handcuffed your team. You look at when Kenny Holland was with the Detroit Red Wings and they won a couple Stanley Cups. He didn't spend a lot of money on goaltending back then. He had Chris Osgood. He didn't spend a lot of money. And I agree with you. I would trade Allmark. I keep Swayman. And to your point, they're not in a position right now where they can bring on different players for draft picks, because to your point, they don't have a lot in the cupboard. But Jimmy Montgomery, I think, is, well, he got the coach of the year last year. He's a tremendous coach. He's done a tremendous job with that team. And people forget, you were talking about the Florida-Boston series. Boston was only 7 seconds away from winning that series in five games if Brad Marchand scores on that breakaway, right? So, but I think they're having a great year. Like, you know, you kind of alluded to, sometimes the best trades are the ones you don't make. And I agree with you. I don't think there's going to be a lot of movement with that organization right now.
Well, he did such an outstanding job, Don Sweeney, last year. You know he's going to be fielding calls. And there's been talk now of Lindholm being traded again from Vancouver because, you know, and this makes sense. They're looking at Gensel for goal scoring. And Gensel was in Pittsburgh when Tockett was there, right? I mean, he knows him pretty well. And so there's a lot of, and, you know, it's funny. And you know this, guys. I mean, there's so many people that think they're going to win the cup. There's probably 10 teams that think they're going to win the cup, and 9 of them are going to make stupid trades at the deadline.
Yeah,
they're going to regret it for the rest of their lives. The apple is right there and the low branches, it's low hanging fruit. They think they can grab it. I think Florida I agree with you, Tim, about Tarasenko. His best days are behind him, but if he goes to Florida, then he has a chance to win a cup. I mean, he's won one with St. Louis, but if he has a chance to win a cup, and all they need him for is, what, 8 weeks, 9 weeks, the rest of the regular season and the playoffs, he's a pretty good pickup for them for a fairly low price, I think.
What do you think of the other trades today with Colorado getting Walker? It's unbelievable, isn't it? Mike, how Ryan Johansson has just fallen off the face of the earth.
I've never been a fan, to be honest with you. I've never been a fan.
I wasn't either.
And there was a selfish aspect to his game. But to get back to Walker, well, they have a couple of defensemen in Philly that were, you know, going to be unrestricted free agents, and Walker was one of them, correct?
Correct.
I mean, so they had to make a decision. You know, I talked to Pete Jones a couple of weeks ago, and he was, you know, he said, this is a really good player, and, you know, we'd like to keep him, but we don't know if we can keep them both. And I heard Danny Briere say, you know, all bets are off. We have to keep our ears open and look to getting better in the future. I mean, they've had a terrific year, Philadelphia. And, you know, you got to give Keith Jones credit, Danny Briere credit. You got to give Tortorella credit. But they're not ready to win a Stanley Cup.
No.
There's no question about it. So they have to keep moving forward with an eye on the future and don't be overly excited by this modicum of success.
So putting your GM hat on here, because the trade deadline is less than 48 hours away, Toronto, you know, we talk about Toronto a lot because it's Toronto and they've got two or three of the best players in the league, but we know their back end is just not built.
Hey, by the way, Mike, he loves Toronto Maple Leaf fans. He just loves them.
So anyway, yeah, you know, I know you've got a tremendous amount of respect for Doug Armstrong. I wouldn't trade Colton Parenko because he's 6'6", 6'8", long stick, doesn't hit like, you know, our old friend, and you know Bobby Plager well. It used to drive Bobby crazy. I'd see Bobby, and Bobby'd be like, I just wish the guy would hit more and be more physical. But that's just not Colton's personality. That's not his style. But he played 27 minutes the other night, and the guy is a workhorse. But he only makes six, you know, I shouldn't say only, but he's making $6.1 million. Every team would love to have him. If you're Doug Armstrong, do you trade a guy like him?
I don't know where the Blues are right now. Where are they? I mean,
They're 7 points back.
Yeah, they're not really going anywhere. They don't look like they're going to be a threat to rise to the top of the conference anytime soon. I mean, he's got to be thinking about the future, but Colton Parenko's a hell of a player.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I don't know. How old is he now? 27, 28?
He's 30.
Is he 30? Yeah, he's starting to get 30. You're starting to – the worm is starting to turn, so I guess you could probably look at it. But, you know, you're creating a huge hole there by trading that guy. And he's been part of that franchise for a while and a solid player. You know, you better be getting something special back. And I don't know what he could possibly get, but I don't know the Blues well enough to try to punch holes in their, you know, trade game. But I do know that you have an asset like that and you move them out, you better be sure of what you're getting back, because what you've had, despite the fact that he may be more of a gentle giant than you like, 27 minutes is a lot of minutes.
Yeah. Mike, who in looking now, coming into the last 19 games, you were talking about there are nine teams that think they can win the playoffs and win the Stanley Cup. Who are you putting as your top three that have the best chance of raising that cup?
Well, I think Florida has the mental makeup. I
agree.
You know, worry about their goaltending mentality. You know, you never know with Bobrovsky, but I think they've learned by their run last year. I think we talked about Tarasenko. I don't know if they're done yet. I think adding some depth is important for them, but I think they're near or at the top of the list. You certainly can't. You can't. I'm not a Vancouver. I'm not going to put my money on Vancouver anytime soon. I mean, I think they've had a great year. I give Rick Tocchet a ton of credit, but I don't think that's a team built to go deep into the playoffs. Colorado is, you know, flirts with it sometimes. I mean, they're pretty good, but I think the team that I'd like to see make a move, and sooner or later they got to do it with McDavid, is Edmonton. I don't know if their goaltending is good enough. I don't know if they're good enough in the back end, but I don't know that Kenny Holland is done with, you know, adding some pieces. I know he did some work today, but, you know, you see them play last night against the Bruins. Draisaitl and McDavid, just they took it over at critical moments in the game. Yeah. And they're starting to get, you know, McDavid's not old by any stretch, but how many years in the league for him now? Eight?
Right.
Yeah, it's 27.
27. I mean, not, you're getting to the peak time of his career. And that son of a bitch can break open a game at any second. I mean, I love watching him play. And I love watching Draisaitl play. How'd you like to be second fiddle to Connor McDavid when you're Leon Draisaitl, who's arguably the second greatest player in the game? But I think that they started so badly. They made the coaching change. Their goaltending is solidified. I'm a little nervous about it. A little nervous about their back end, but there's enough up front. I don't think Toronto's going to do it. I don't think they have the gumption. I don't think they have the character. I don't think they have the blue line. Goaltending's been better than I expected, but I think it's going to be another year of disappointment for Toronto fans. So I guess to answer the question, Florida on one side, Colorado and Edmonton on the other.
It's funny, Tim. I know you're going to say something, but it's really funny because I asked the same question to a lot of people, and I never get anyone that talks about Dallas, especially with the acquisition that they just got just the other day, which was probably one of the best acquisitions that so far of the year. Dallas is a team that nobody's looking at. Michael, what's your view on Dallas?
Yeah, and I'm not looking at them either, and I don't know why. I mean, they hang in there and they play pretty strongly. I mean,
they have no holes if you look at it. Zero.
Well, they picked up Chris Tanev, which you and I are big Chris Tanev fans, JR. And he only played 11 minutes in his first game the other night. They're easing him in, but I thought that was a great acquisition, Mike, by Dallas. To your point, Mike, they're kind of a quiet team right now, right? Like, you don't really hear a lot about them, but I think they're built for the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess I can't get past it. Tyler Seguin's not in a position to be a critical player anymore. Ben is old in the tooth. I mean, they're a good team. Don't get me wrong. They're a good team. But I don't find there's enough.
They've knocked on the door the last couple of years.
They just haven't
gotten over it. And they've added pieces. And their goaltender, I still think, is his best is still yet to come. In Ottinger.
Well, he's a great goaltender. He's just a great. I mean, there's some great goaltenders in the league, and he's one of them. We talk about teams that don't have goaltending, teams that do have goaltending. As a defenseman playing in front of good goaltenders, like Pete Peters had one of the great years of all time in 82-83. One of the great years. We'd make a mistake, and he'd gobble something up. And nobody would remember. Nobody would remember Mike's stupid bonehead play because Peters backed him up and stoned somebody. It just instills a confidence in their team, you know, that they can get away with making a mistake. And, you know, you make a mistake and there's a bad goalie there and the puck goes in the net. Next thing you know, they're writing about it, your mistake and the goaltender's mistake in the paper the next day, and you feel like a dink. So goaltenders cover a multiple of sins.
So there's a clip on social media today that our social media guy found. And so it's a question to both you guys. It's a clip from you guys on the panel at NBC, and you guys are arguing about the hit on from Dustin Brown on Roosevelt.
I don't think it was the Brown on Roosevelt. I think it was the hit on the Tang from that donkey that played for Dallas at the time, the guy who just ran around doing stupid things.
It said Brown on Roosevelt on the clip, but would you guys do that for TV, or did you guys get into some heated arguments on there? Because I think that's interesting.
No, he was generally an asshole all on his own.
Listen, there was no way that I was wrong on our channel, and there's no way that Mike was wrong when we were on together.
There was never a rehearsal.
Right? No.
We never went through anything. We had a pregame rundown just to identify the topics. And then everybody, you know, JR went off to gamble someplace. I went to have lunch or whatever it was. And then we'd come back and do the show. It was, but it was never, there was never any sort of,
well, you know, what's, you know, it's, Tim, you know, what's funny is Mike and we would have these pre show meetings, and Mike and I would start disagreeing and start going at it in the room. Right. And literally our producer would say, enough, stop, save it for the show, And we had to stop. We couldn't go. That's why we sat for hours waiting for that opportunity to get on the show so we could win the argument. And I don't know if any of us won.
No, but we had fun doing it.
You know? We did.
It was, you know, and that's what TV's supposed to be when you're talking hockey. You're supposed to have some fun with it. Supposed to be entertaining. And that's why, and with Jonesy on the show, and he, you know, how Jonesy was, he was great. It was, you know, we just let it rip. You never know what was going to come out of that clown's mouth.
Yeah, but he was the instigator, Mike. Yeah, Jonesy was always the instigator.
He would throw the rock and then say, who, me? You know? That was Pete Jones. He was just, you know, he called behind everybody's back. He called him, what's this Larry doing? What's that Larry doing? He just insult the hell out of them. Then next thing you know, he's got his arm around the guy.
Yeah. Mr. Innocent Keith Jones.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, Mike, we have a chat. We have a chat line on our show. And
Hang on a second, because I'm going to run out of juice here. You've been acting a while. I'm going to change into a new situation, but hang on.
I want to stay there. You can listen because most of our listeners are going to be listening, not watching. And I want you to kind of get into your mind because we have a great question by Keenan, one of our listeners that we have every week. He says, I want a good Don Cherry story. You've been around the game and you've been around Don Cherry and obviously what he's done for the game. You must have a funny story about Don Cherry in your past.
And you know, I have to root out the ones that are repeatable. Even for me, which it goes to a different level. I got called up by the Bruins in 1975 in the spring. I had been in Rochester for most of 2 years, but I had played one or two games before that. And we were in New Haven on a Wednesday night. And the Bruins were playing in Buffalo on Thursday. So it's a long way from New Haven to Buffalo. So we played the game in New Haven on Wednesday night. They called me into the room and said, you're going to go to play in Buffalo tomorrow. And, you know, they didn't say get on the plane in, at LaGuardia an hour down the road. They said get on the bus and drive 8 hours back to Rochester. And then the next afternoon, I got a car and drove to Buffalo. And Buffalo had a hell of a team. You know, they had the
French Connection,
and Danny Gare was on the, I mean, they were a good team. So we started to get beat pretty badly. And, you know, the Bruins had already clinched. It was right at the end of the year. And the Bruins had clinched. But he came up to me at the end of the bench. And you're going to have to forgive the language. I'm just going to tell you the truth. Right?
Good.
So he leans over the bench and he said to me, what the fuck happened to you? And I, you know, I'm like, you know, what the fuck happened to me? You college commie pinko faggot.
That's what he said.
That's what he said. And the next period he came down and he said the same thing. And it was, I didn't know what to make of it. They sent me down and then I got called back up to Toronto for a game on Saturday night. And it was a different story. I got in a fight with Pat Buttek. I can't repeat this one on the air, but he was happy with me after the fight. And he was so much fun to play for. He was just, there was simple rules. You know, you work hard, you play the physical game. Here's the system. Defenseman, you get the puck, you fire it around the boards to the wingers. The wingers will run through their opposing defenseman at the blue line. And then we'll dump it in and chase them and run them out of the rink. There'll be a third man high in the zone, and that's it. That was it. And, you know, every you know, we knew we would skate on Mondays or Tuesdays. He'd really crack the whip on us. And I'd never let anybody off the hook for lack of commitment physically. But he also, you know, we had trouble beating Montreal, as you probably are well aware. And we're going to Montreal for one game, and he calls a defenseman together. And he said, okay, you're coming with me. Or it's like 4 o'clock in the afternoon the night before a game against Montreal. So he takes us to the pub around the corner, and we start pounding beers, like, just like no tomorrow. No dinner, no burgers, no nothing. There's like chips and popcorn on the table. That was it. And he told stories and laughed. And the next night we got to the arena, and Canadians were flying. They beat the crap out of us 7-3. So he gathers the defense around him after the game. He said, you know, boys, they beat us tonight, but at least we tried.
your resume. You went to Colgate University. He's like, the only Colgate I know is the toothpaste. He probably didn't coach a lot of college kids back then.
So. Oh, no. College commie Pinko, right? Jesus. But he did. We had a good relationship. You know, he used to make me drive to the rink on game days for the morning skate. Now, this is like my second year in the league, and I lived down the street from him. So he said, we're going into the rink. We're going in the rink this morning. And on the way into the rink, he would practice his pregame speech. Like, literally his pregame speech. They would say it 3 times. No, I should say it this way. No, I shouldn't say it this way. Like, I'm like, what the hell? And then I'd walk in, the guys would be looking at me like, you're coming in with a coach, right? What's wrong with this picture? And so by the time he started to do his pregame speech, I already knew what he was going to say. It was like second nature. But after the pregame skate, we would drive home up Route 1 going north to our homes. And we'd always stop, you know, the Kowloon restaurant, JR. The Kowloon was famous Chinese restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Saugus. And he would order for his wife and kids. And he'd have 2 beers this is game day. 2 beers while we're waiting for the order to be processed. And he'd always order spare ribs for he and I to eat on the way home. Like, we'd eat the spare ribs, throw it out the window, eat the spare ribs, throw it out the window. I mean, does it get any better than that to have a coach like that? When we would drive in, I know I've told this story. I don't know if you've heard it, JR, but the story of the weed, we drive in, and it's like Route 1 has 2 lanes going one way, 2 lanes going the other. And a little median strip, metal median strip in the middle. And so we're driving in one day, and Grapes noticed this tall weed. Like, it's March or something. He said, look at that weed. It's in March. It's got through the winter. It's still alive. Said, that weed has, and like every day he's talking about that weed should be a Bruin. That weed is a Bruin through and through. It's got more character than you can believe, you know? So now it turns to April, and what happens in April, they clean up the junk off the road, right? So we're driving one way down Route 1, and the weed is on the other side, and he sees the street sweeper coming to get the weed. And he plows on the brakes, and he said, Mike, go get that weed. I said, what the hell are you talking about? I got to run across 2 lanes of highway going 60 miles an hour to get this weed. So I finally, okay, fine, it's the coach. I can't, and I got to do it. So I run across the highway, and it's in the median strip. My cars are going left and right around me. I'm pulling it out so I can get the roots, bring it back to the car. He wraps it in newspaper at the nearest gas station, wets it down, drives it home as fast as he can, right? And he plants it in the backyard. So a couple of weeks later, I think I'm saying, we're driving into a game. And I said, Don, how's the weed doing? He said, you know, the springtime, Rose likes her flowers. She went out and weeded the garden, and the weed died.
That's fantastic. Anyway. Last question, because you have to tell the story of how in New York, how the shoe incident happened, what caused you to go into, because it is one of the most iconic sports event memories of all time. When you guys went up into the stands and you hit the guy with the shoe, how did that start? And what happened to you? What was the repercussions of it?
JR, first, Mike, thank you for asking that, JR, because that was going to be my question.
It's the best way to finish. We got to finish with Mike Milbury that way.
that story, and I want to hear it right from the horse's mouth. So I'm looking forward to this.
Well, I get a bad rap on this one, JR. You know, it was December 23rd, 1979. We're playing the Rangers, our rivals, you know, big time game for us. And the score is 3-2 and with like 10 seconds to go. Espo, who's now on the Rangers, gets a breakaway. Somebody actually threw a tennis ball in front of him. He claims that that's why he didn't score against Cheevers, but he missed the breakaway. And so we win the game 3-2. And now, you maybe don't remember playing in Madison Square Garden at that time, but it was dangerous. Like, they'd throw batteries or bottles. I mean, there was no security back then. It was just, it was wild. It was, you know, and so we win the game. You know, I give Cheesy the pat on the pads to, because it's, that's what you do. And then I skate right off the ice. It's December 23rd. We're going to have day off tomorrow, Christmas Day. You know, everybody's, I'm happy, big win. I go straight to the locker room. And in the meantime, I'm the first guy off the ice. The two teams cross each other, and Al Secord kicked out the skates of, I think it was one of the Swedes. It was either Hedberg or what was the other guy that played for New York at the time. Anyway, doesn't matter. It was, he offended the Ranger goaltender, John Davidson, at the time. Davidson came running down to confront Secord. And so now the two teams, because the goalie's down there and there's bitching and moaning, and I'm in the locker room and the Budweiser's on ice and I'm ready to go home. And finally, Cheevers comes in and I said, what's happening out there? And he said, there's some sort of beef going on. Like, and geez, he's got a cigarette in his mouth already and he's ready to just relax. So unbeknownst to me, this conflict happened on the ice. And then the teams moved towards the glass, and the glass was low in Madison Square. I said it was everywhere. And it was somebody, one of the fans reached over and grabbed Stan Jonathan's stick and start to menace it, like sort of swing it a little bit. I don't know if he really was intending to hit a player, but O'Reilly, who didn't ever want to yield to anyone in any fashion, anywhere, anytime, whether it's driving home out Route 1 for, you know, road rage, or in the Boston Garden fighting somebody else, he couldn't take it, and he jumped over the glass. I'm not here. I'm not there. I'm not seeing any of this. I have no idea what's going on. And then, of course, when the captain goes in, then everybody else followed him. And it turns out that there was two sons and a father that were sort of the culprits in starting this thing. And all of a sudden you had half the team over the glass in the stands. And I don't mind telling you, they were doing some pretty good numbers on some of those guys down below. But I ran back. I dropped my gloves and stick and ran back out to the ice surface. And I was happy going home Christmas. And I have no idea what's happened out there. I have no idea why my team is like 10 rows up fighting with the New York Ranger fans in Madison Square Garden. So I run up the stairs. I didn't climb the glass. I ran up the stairs and walked over to the aisleway. And I saw Peter McNabb, who was like the late, great Peter McNabb, I might add, was yes, like 10 or 12 rows up. And so I ran up to help him, and he had the guy backwards over the seat. So the seat was facing forward like I am, but the guy was backwards with his feet up. And I, you know, no idea what I was doing. And, you know, his leg was kind of kicking out at me, and I just grabbed it. And I thought it was a lot like, I saw the tape later, it really wasn't that bad kicking at me. But I thought at that time, I thought he was trying to kill me. Right. And I will also say that walking up into the stands was a macho moment, because there was everybody just spread. You know, I was 6'2 at the time, and you're on skates, so you're like 6'5 or 6. And so it was just like, man, here I am in good shape and sweating, and all my shoulder pads are on. So, and it was like the parting of the Red Sea. Everybody just let me through. And I grabbed the guy and I gave him one smack on the thigh. And the worst thing I did was throw a shoe on the ice. And we finally got out of there, and they surrounded our bus. They were actually shaking the hell out of our bus. I thought we were in trouble for a while, but the police finally settled it down and we got out of there. And I wound up, Terry got 7 games. I got 6. Peter got 6. We were sued for $7 million.
Wow.
They finally threw, and that was a lot of money back then, right?
Right.
They threw that out. And we actually appealed the decision and had a hearing in front of the whole Board of Governors. And I guess it was a really rather a close vote. But if they had overturned the decision of John Ziegler, little schoolgirlish, you know, commissioner that he was, it would have meant that he was out. And so they couldn't quite push that button. So I wound up with 6 games. Not right, JR. Not right.
Not right. You didn't even start it. You were getting ready to crack that beer. And I'm sure your trainer loved having to sharpen those skates after you're going up on all the concrete.
But anyway, it was, you know, I mean, every year at Christmas time around here in Boston, it's a tradition. You got to see it on SportsCenter. You got to see it on the news. It's, you know, it's coming up on, what is it now? Almost 45 years.
It's one of the greatest clips to watch. And I'm sure it's still one of the most watched clips on YouTube. I think everything that you do, Mike, is great. I can't thank you enough for joining us. I know Tim was really excited to have you on tonight because, again, he's expressed to you his gratitude and why. I can't thank you enough, Tim. I'll let you kind of send Mike off, and I appreciate your time, Mike. You're the best. I love you.
No problem, kid.
I think that's why Matt Rempe, Mike, has taken over New York the last couple of weeks, because we've lost that physicality in our game. We're not saying that we want bench clearing brawls and fights in the stands, but we can't lose the physicality of our game. You watch a lot of hockey. There's nights where there's not any hitting, and that's what the best part of the playoffs is. Guys that have never thrown a hit all year are all of a sudden throwing hits and so on. That's what makes our sport so good, is the physicality. And I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on, for your support. And also breaking news, I just got an alert that Hanifin looks like he's been traded to the Vegas Knights. Vegas seems
to do it. Amazing. Vegas
seems to do it every year.
Wow.
What they need, because they already have a tremendous defense, but what a pickup that would be for them, Mike.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yes.
Do you know what did they give up?
Don't know yet.
It's interesting. You know what? You said something really cool, Tim. You said that the game, we can't lose the physicality of the game. Well, you know what the game lost? The game lost a great analyst in Mike Milbury, and they lost a great analyst and Jeremy Roenick. And it has not been the same on television without you and I there, Michael. And I love you. Thanks for joining. Thanks for everybody. Thanks for everybody for joining us.
Take care of your wife, will
you? I'm gonna go throw some Vicks on her back right now so she feels really good. And She's on the way up. She held her cough for most of the time. She's sitting here saying, "I love you and I miss you." And
yeah, if it's you, I know it won't be on her back. You'll be rubbing the Vicks.
That's very true. You know me oh too well. Well, thanks again. Thanks to Whiskey in the Wild and Bet Online, our sponsors. Tim, you were great. Mike Milber, I love you. We'll see you guys on Monday for a Snipes and Stripes weekend edition. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you later.
See you guys.
See ya, buddy.